This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up later in the program, LA Clippers owner Donald Sterling has been condemned across the board for his racist remarks in a taped phone conversation, but a difficult question has come up in light of what's happened. What right does Sterling, or any of us for that matter, have to privacy?
First, it's time for Curious Wisconsin. For decades, if you drove down Highway 12 between Baraboo and Sauk City, you'd be greeted by a view of thousands of buildings. They were all part of the Badger Army Ammunition Plant, which was once the largest munitions facility in the world and played a crucial role in three American wars.
Since being decommissioned years ago, there's been significant change at the Badger site, and the majority of the plant's buildings are now gone. Last month, the Sauk Prairie Recreation Area officially opened where Badger once stood, and for the first time since the 1940s, the public has access to the land, which reaches well into the thousands of acres.
Today on Curious Wisconsin, we take a look at the history and future of the Badger Army Ammunition Plant site, and here to help us do just that is Verlin Miller, archivist with the Badger History Group. Verlin, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, Badger Ammunition Plant has a long history here in Wisconsin. We just heard a thumbnail sketch of some of it, but it's going on to a new life. What's the overall vision for what Badger's going to become?
I think that's a good question. Some of that is not answerable yet because the DNR is still working on their master plan process. I'm not sure when that will be done. I'm pleased that they're not working on a date deadline. They're working on it as it goes. When it's done, it's done. And I think that's the right way to do it.
And it will be a public site for recreation.
Yeah. It's just a question. We don't know yet what kind of recreation.
And everybody's offering up plans. I think a lot of people have suggestions of what they'd like to see that turn into.
I think you name the outdoor interest group and the DNR has heard from them, including Badger History Group.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to the history of Badger. It was designed to be the largest ammunition plant in the world. You worked there for a good long while. Can you give us a sense of just how big this place was?
The original, in numbers, the original acquisition was 10,565 acres. That was in 1942. After World War II, they sold off some of it. And they got it down to 7,300 acres, actually a little less than that. Then they had to reacquire some of that land for the Korean War. So at that point, it was 7,300 acres, and that's what it was when they declared it excess in 1997.
And this land that it's on, this place is pretty much steeped in history, even before the Badger Ammunition Plant. Can you give us a little bit of the history of the land itself?
Well, it was farmland, 74 farms, 26 Wiggins Bay cottages, 3 churches, 3 schools, and 3 cemeteries were taken for the Badger Ordnance Works. So it's a story of people more as much as the land. I look at it that history is not a story of a place or buildings or machines. It's the history or the story of the people who were born, lived, and died and worked on that place, worked with those machines, and worked in those buildings.
And those people before the plant, there were farmers there who were moved, in effect, because of the building of that plant.
Yeah, they didn't have a choice. The government came in and told them, we are going to buy your property, end of story. Their initial offer was a lowball offer, which most of them did not accept. And so they went through the condemnation proceedings and got a little more. I think they got close to market value, but I can't really say for sure because I don't know what market value was at that time, except that it was pretty lousy because this was the end of the Depression. If it had been 3-4 years earlier, it would even have been worse.
Do we know where they went and if they're aware, if any of them are still around to see the change in the plant?
Some of the farmers, some of the families went to Columbus, Stoughton, Baraboo, Sauk Prairie area. Some of them quit farming, retired. I grew up across the street from a guy who'd had a farm there, and I didn't even know it until I got with Badger History Group looking at the acquisition map and the names there and thought, holy cow, I knew him. And there were some others that were members of my church. My dad was a self-employed carpenter, and I recognized some of those names as his customers.
Mm. So the U.S. is building this arsenal of democracy, a war against Germany and Japan. They need this largest ammunition plant in the world. Why did it end up here in Wisconsin? Why on that site?
They had a list of criteria. See if I can remember how much of it I can remember. 250 miles from the nearest coastline. That was security. A good supply of water. Close to our electric energy supply. Highway transportation, highway and rail. Away from a metropolitan area. You don't put an explosives plant in the middle of a big city. And I think there were some others there. A labor force. And I think the last one was politics. There's politics in everything.
What was it like for the people who worked there? I mean, this thing was huge and it employed a huge number of people. What was it like then?
During World War II, the employment was just a little over 12,000, construction and production. Korea and Vietnam, both the peak was about 5,400. It was a busy place, and it was a significant economic impact, positive, on the area when it was in operation. And I think even after it was... when it was in standby.
I mean, this would have been one of the bigger towns in Wisconsin during World War. I mean, 12,000, not one of the biggest cities, but this is a large population working there.
Oh, yeah. Across the highway from the powder plant. Well, the powder plant was 3 miles wide by 5 miles long, if you want to put it in rectangular terms. Across Highway 12 was Badger Village. If that had been completed and populated to design, it would have been a city of 5,000. Bigger than Sauk City and Prairie du Sac combined at that time.
So interesting. Well, the plant was operating during three wars, so it's had this long history, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. What was produced there?
Propellant. The stuff that makes the bullet go from the gun to the target. We made smokeless propellant. We're capable of making smokeless propellant for any weapon from the M1 carbine up to the 16-inch guns on the battleships. I don't think we did, but we had the capability. And then rocket propellant. During Korean operation, they built a ball powder propellant facility, and that was the only government-owned ball powder facility in the country. And that was the primary reason we got activated for Vietnam.
We're talking right now with archivist Verlin Miller about the history of Badger Army Ammunition Plant and the future of the land. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Has the plant played a role in your family's history? Have you ever wondered about it as you drove by? Did you maybe, or a family member, someone you know, work there? We'd love to hear your experience. And if you visited the Sauk Prairie Recreation Area that it's becoming where the plant stood, we'd love to hear your impressions. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, and you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up that conversation in just a few minutes and maybe hear what it's like to work in an area surrounded with nitroglycerin and other products like that.
And we're taking a look at the history of the Badger Army Ammunition Plant. At one point, it was the largest ammo plant in the world, but now the majority of it has been demolished and efforts are underway to restore the land to its natural prairie state. You can join with your questions and your comments, maybe your experiences on the land, past or present, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post at the Central Time Facebook page.
We have Verlin Miller, archivist with the Badger History Group, in the studio with us. We'll go right to our callers now. We've got Mary on the line in Richland Center. Hi there, Mary.
Hi there. My father in 1942 worked at the plant. I grew up hearing about the plant. He lived at my aunt's house, my mom's sister, and my mom came down to visit her, and they ultimately got married. So I guess in a way I'd have to say that thanks to Badger, I'm here.
Wow.
But we grew up hearing about Badger, and I'm really excited that it's going to be turned into a park and in its natural state. And I just want to say I'm a sustainer, and to all the people out there, it's the way to go with public radio. Thank you.
Mary, thanks for the call and the kind words, and you can pledge at WPR.org if you want to follow Mary's advice. So Mary's dad, Verlin, was there right at the beginning. I mean, 12,000 jobs, as you said, this is right after the Depression. This is a big deal for the economy of an area.
Oh, yes. There was no I don't think there was any problem getting people to work at Badger in 42 because everybody was looking for a job. In 1944, they built the rocket production plant, and that was a different story. By 1942, everybody that wanted to work was working at least one job. A lot of people, I think, were working two. So they did a lot of recruiting to get people to work there to operate that rocket propellant plant. They had to work for it.
Such a fantastic call from Mary. And I know, Verlin, you've got a personal connection, too. Could you tell us a little more about what your personal connection was with the plant?
Well, I worked there for 26 years. One of the churches that was taken, my dad purchased for the lumber and tore down. After going through, looking at the history of the plant and the people that were there, I discovered that there are people that lost their farms there that were related to me, or I'm related to them. So, yeah, I have multiple connections to that place.
Does it feel kind of nostalgic to you now? I mean, it's got all this history of the land, but also the culture of the munitions plant.
I don't know if I'd say so much nostalgia it's been there all my life. And so it's changed, and I'm not sure I welcome some of the changes.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk a little bit about working there. As I teased a little earlier, I mean, you worked with explosive materials. Did you have a sense of danger on the job?
Oh, sure. I worked in the instrument shop. So I could be sent to any place in the plant that had a process control instrumentation. I had electronics background, so I worked mostly on electronic instrumentation. That sent me into the ball powder area, rocket. No matter where I went, I was working with equipment that had explosives either in it or around it or whatever.
And you heard explosions?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. 3 weeks after I started to work there, I was working on the instruments in the oleum plant in the northeast corner of the plant with another guy who knew his way around the place, because I was new, and we heard a loud explosion. Everybody ran outside to a catwalk where we could see a little further, and those guys knew exactly where it was. It was ball powder, hardening house. One still out of eight in the building blew up.
Oh, boy.
And it made a mess of the building.
And there was something about the air there, wasn't there, that was particular to the ammunition plant?
Depending where you worked. In the smokeless process, the solvent was ethyl ether, or ether alcohol, I should say. In ball powder, the solvent was, for heaven's sakes, ethyl acetate, and also benzene in one part of the process. So depending where you worked, you had some fumes, but efforts were made to minimize the fumes, particularly with the ether alcohol solvent. They had a huge vacuum system that pulled the fumes out of the building. If they didn't, it would have been impossible to work in there.
And nitroglycerin fumes, was that an issue?
I forgot that. For people working in a rocket area, there are some parts of the process where the product had to be heated. And that gave off a lot of fumes, so people would have NG headaches, and NG is nitroglycerin. I had to go into one of those buildings one night when I was on shift, because a refrigeration man that I was paired with had to check some temperature control equipment in there. And I didn't get a headache, but I have a sinus problem, and as soon as I went into that building, my sinus was plugged up.
Oh, boy. Well, and now, you know, flash forward all these years, and the site has been rebranded. It is becoming a recreation area. A lot of the buildings already gone, and it's been open to the public for a few weeks now. What kind of reaction are we seeing?
I'm hearing good things. We have a museum right at the entrance to the plant. Right now it's closed. I'll get to that in a minute. But before we had to close, visitors to the museum was way up. And people came in. They wanted to see what it was. People had been driving by there for years and saw those buildings. And, well, what was this place? Now we can see it. Mm-hmm. And they go into the plant area, and there's nothing to see of what was there.
And the museum you mentioned, you've got some construction work going on. Do you have a sense of when you might be able to reopen?
Not really. Mm-hmm. The building just transferred to the DNR last month, which means that now the building has to be up to current codes for handicapped accessible, and it is not. When it was built, it met codes, but those codes have changed in the past 40 years. So we're closed now until we can make the changes necessary to meet code. And Badger History Group is the principal occupant of the building, so we're picking up the full tab of this work. So we need to raise $10,000 to $15,000. And that's going to make the difference of when we get it done.
Well, Verlin, good luck with that project, and I look forward to being able to visit the museum.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we've been talking to Verlin Miller, archivist with the Badger History Group. He joined us to talk about the history and, of course, the future still to come of the land that hosted the Badger Army Ammunition Plant.